April 19, 2018, Mike the Rotocop here, joined by Randy Haynes and Colin Weatherwax, Dirt Dogs Podcast, presented by FWFB. And there's one thing that we can say for sure that I know we'll agree on this podcast is that all our teams pretty much suck at this point. The Mariners, the Orioles, and Texas. I think the Mariners might suck a little bit less than your guys' teams suck, but they still all suck, so we could agree on that. I want to get to performances in this podcast, some quick reactions. I know it hasn't been too long yet, and it's a small sample size, but just go over some reactions to what's gone on early in the season so far. Of course, there's been injuries we'll get to, and then we're going to play a little game of Would You Rather before we wrap it up. Let's start with the performances, and Ohtani, everybody's talking about it. He was so good, and then he has his first real test against Boston. Goes two innings, three earned, one strikeout. Pretty much got beat up. It was kind of a welcome to the league moment for him. Turns out he had the blister, and he's in the lineup tonight hitting sixth, so the blister might not affect his hitting, could affect his pitching. Colin, you watched the game. Talk to me a little bit about Ohtani and Boston here.
Well, I was watching for Mookie Betts, honestly, and he led off the game with a home run. I think the blister issue, quote unquote, is a smokescreen. I called the start beforehand. I figured he'd get blown up. It's off his regular rotation slot, so he was slotted to start every Sunday to start off. He had to get pushed back to Tuesday, so that could be a factor. And then also, he's only played against Oakland so far. He's played against Oakland twice, and he needed to see a real, major league lineup with, one through nine, where it's just power and speed and contact, and that's what Boston's lineup is right now. So I figured he'd run into that freight train. I didn't think he would make it out. I didn't think he would only last two innings, but I think the blister is a phantom, phantom injury, and this might just be a bump in the road for Ohtani. I do think, he's still going to provide top 30 starting numbers as long as he gets the innings. But, going up against Boston, that's what we all wanted to see. We wanted to see him go up against some real competition and see how he came out of it.
It's funny, and you mentioned that he only faced one team so far. Another guy, Garrett Cole, his three starts previously were Texas, San Diego, Texas, and everybody was on the Cole train. And then he faced his first quote-unquote real lineup in Seattle, and he did great against them. So he kind of passed a test that Ohtani couldn't pass. Randy, what do you think here about Ohtani?
Yeah, it doesn't worry me really from a pitching standpoint, because Boston's killing everybody right now. There's no shame in getting dinged up by them. If I do have to pick something that kind of worries me with Ohtani, is the fact that he is hitting already. If he's got a blister, I don't know where on his finger the blister is, but it doesn't sound like a good idea. He's there mainly to pitch, and that's where he's going to have his most value, not only to the Angels, but especially to us as fantasy owners. And I don't like that he's already back in the lineup, looks like 2 days later. So that gives me a little cause for concern that maybe that could make it worse. But he was going to get hit eventually, and if you're going to get hit by somebody, at least it's a good team like Boston. So I'm not worried about Ohtani, the pitcher, from a performance standpoint, but the injury does leave me a little concerned, I can't lie.
So what Ohtani said after the game through a translator was, usually in Japan, I pitch without it fully healing. I fought through it. It's going to be something similar this time, too. So he's saying that he always gets blisters on his right middle finger, so it's something that he's pitched through before. What's not looking so good is that his next start right now is scheduled to be against Houston, and they're going to hit anybody, so it's definitely going to be another test for Ohtani there. A couple other guys I want to get to is, and the first one is a guy who is blowing everybody away, Patrick Corbin, the other night against San Francisco, almost does a no-hitter. He has 9 innings, complete game shutout, 1 hit, 8 strikeouts. There's been a lot of talk about him developing another pitch and the humidor and a bunch of different factors coming to play here. Talk to me a little bit about Corbin, Randy.
Yeah, I wasn't the biggest. I've really never been a big Corbin guy, but through four starts at least, you'd be crazy to argue with what he's been doing. Getting a lot of strikeouts. All the peripherals back it up. Whatever you want to look at, Sierra, FIP, XFIP, it all backs it up. His 1.65 ERA is being legit. There is a strand right there of 86% that's obviously going to come down. His BABIP's at 2.14. That's obviously going to rise a little bit. But from a skills standpoint, this looks like somebody that's finally, figured out, the potential that he had back in 2010, 2011, 2012 when he was coming up, through the Diamondback system before he suffered some injuries. So I've done a pretty quick turnaround on Corbin so far from what I've seen through four starts. I don't think this is a top 20 pitcher I don't think it's going to be a top 20 pitcher this year, but this could definitely be somebody that is a, you know, a potential league winner if he's able to pile up strikeouts like this and keep his ratios down.
And there was a lot of talk about the humidor in the offseason. I don't think anybody would have predicted Patrick Corbin would be the best pitcher in Arizona in the month of April, because he's pretty much solidified himself. No matter what he does now, he'll end up being their best pitcher in the month of April. Colin, Patrick Corbin, what did you see there?
Well, he was their opening day starter, so Arizona thought that he was their best starting pitcher to start the season. But, you know, the main concern with Patrick Corbin was coming off of Tommy John. He's had a full year to recover from that, and he's actually started to throw his fastball a lot less, and that was the pitch that was getting, you know, turned on all of his starts last year. So he's starting to throw his slider more. He has a sinker now, and then he also has this slow slurve type pitch. It's usually between like 68 miles per hour and 72 miles per hour, and it looks like a slider, but it's just so slow it's throwing all the hitters off. And he was using it to perfection against San Francisco, where he should have had that no hitter. Just a lazy check swing single by Brandon Belt was very frustrating as an owner of Corbin. But one of the things with Patrick Corbin as a fantasy owner, I would be trying to see if I can sell him high, you know, looking for a top 10, 15 starter. If someone truly believes, you know, all the way till the end of the world that he's going to be, you know, the ace of their staff or the ace of Arizona staff. And if I can get a top 10, 15 pitcher that has shown it before, I'm definitely going to pull the trigger on that. But other than that, I do like what I've seen from Corbin, and I'm very intrigued to see what he does for a full season.
And selling high is a risky game that people play, especially in redraft leagues, when you're really only paying for 4 or 5 months here. And you sell a guy like Corbin, or you sell a guy like Garrett Cole, who's at the top of his peak of his value right now, it could come back to bite you when these guys have Cy Young seasons. So that's definitely something to consider. Now, Colin, I hate to do this to you. We're going to have to talk Kenley Jansen. It wouldn't be right if we didn't talk Kenley Jansen on this podcast. What pick was he in the main event for you?
He was in the fourth round.
Fourth round pick in the main event. He has 2 blown saves and 4 opportunities. The velocity's down. It's climbing back up a little bit. It seems like when he's in trouble, he kind of gasses it up a little bit more. But it's still not where it should be, especially for the fourth round Kenley Jansen that you paid for. Talk to me, Kenley Jansen, Colin.
I'm so nervous about Kenley Jansen. You know, it was a panic pick for me. I've never been the guy to take a closer that high. It's such a volatile position, and I've said that all throughout the offseason. So I kind of, you know, I was a hypocrite and I took him, but there was a starting pitching run that I missed out on, and I wasn't comfortable with taking any of them. I wanted to make sure that I could at least guarantee one of the pitching categories and not get too far behind the eight ball. But, yeah, I'm very nervous about what I've seen so far. It could be an Aroldis Chapman season like last year for him, and that's unsettling for me taking him in the fourth round. But I hope he turns it around. He can still provide, you know, he could still provide the saves as long as he can stop hanging his fastball right in their zone. So, I mean, blowing a save against San Diego, you know, starting off the season against San Francisco and Arizona, it's very unsettling, and I'm hoping he turns it around because I definitely need him to.
And there's a funny tweet, I'll look it up now, that Rob Silver sent out today regarding Jansen. But Randy, are you as nervous as Colin is about Jansen?
I don't own Jansen anywhere, but I'm not just in general. I'm not nervous. I know it's frustrating so far, but Dave Roberts said, I think it's either today or yesterday, that, you know, a lot more of this would have to happen for him to even think about removing Jansen from the closer's role. And, you know, the velocity is down, but it's not like it's down to a career low. You know, his velocity right now is hovering around like 91 or so. And in 2012, that was his average velocity. And his ERA was 2.35 that year. He was still striking out a ton of guys. Maybe that's a little misleading, depending on the, you know, if the guns are still, you know, hot as they've been over the last year or so. But it's still in the ballpark of where he's been able to succeed before. I'm not worried about Jansen just yet. I think it's still too early in the season to overreact.
Yeah, and one of the things with drafting Jansen is you know that he's going to have that long leash. He's done it for so long that it's going to take a blow up of mass proportions to take him out of that role. And there's just no one on that team that, you know, has the experience that they can just throw in whenever Jansen has, you know, a couple off days in a row. So that I had that going for me, that he hasn't lost his job yet. So there is that.
So the tweet I was referring to was Rob Silver quoted RotoWorld saying Dave Roberts says that Jansen's a long way from not closing. And Rob Silver quotes and writes, "This is what every manager says, one blown save before they replace their closer." So I thought that was pretty funny.
I hope that's not true.
I thought that was pretty funny and pretty accurate. So we'll see what happens the next time Jansen blows a save. It might not happen soon. It might happen a couple months from now, and we'll forget about all this. Hopefully, in your sake, Colin, that's the case. But that we'll see how that one plays out. On a positive note for your main event team is Mookie Betts. And he had the 3-home run game. He hit the homer off Ohtani. Everybody's raving about Mookie Betts right now. It seems like you almost got a value pick by getting him outside the top three, because this guy's going to probably put up top three numbers this year. Talk to me about how happy you are with Mookie Betts, Colin.
I love Mookie Betts. He's just so, you know, he's so electric. I love watching him. I think he's one of the youngest players to have three home run games in their careers. And, you know, he's going to provide with the steals. He's going to provide with the average. He had a little bit of a flare up of a foot injury a couple days ago, and that made me a little nervous, but he came back from it and, you know, bombed 3 home runs in LA. So he was very valuable at the pick that I took him at. I believe it was pick 9 in the main event. And he's going to be, you know, like you said, Mike, probably a top 3 to 5 player as long as he stays healthy in fantasy this year. And I'm loving, you know, taking him that late.
What overall pick did you get him at?
9th.
9th. So that's obviously a steal there, right, Randy?
Yeah, that is. Yeah, I had Mookie as a top probably 5-6 player on my board. So that was a really good value there for you, Colin. You should be happy with that.
Definitely happy about it. So did you watch that game, Randy, the Mookie Betts 3-home run game?
I'm an old man. I fell asleep in like the 3rd inning, but I did get to see the 1st home run. So it was a no doubt about it.
Yeah, it definitely was, and it was a nice welcome to the league moment for Ohtani, like I said earlier. So Betts will continue to stay hot. He might even stay out the whole season. Another guy that's scorching hot right now, and I'm a huge fan of this dude, Jet Lowry. He's in .346, 6 homers, 21 RBIs so far, and he's really putting together some great at-bats. They actually walked him to pitch to Chris Davis the other day in a high-leverage situation, if I'm not mistaken. Jet Lowry, can he keep this up here, Randy?
No, but he's somebody that's always performed, never to this level, but he's always performed well enough when he's been healthy. He just can't stay healthy. So, you know, there's no such thing as a sell high with somebody like Jed Lowry. Just kind of ride it out, enjoy it while it lasts. Maybe it lasts a little bit longer than we're even thinking, but, you know, it's a nice little story at the end of the year. It's part of what makes fantasy fun and keeps it interesting that somebody like this can pop up and be, you know, leading the world in every kind of power category right now.
Yeah, he leads the American League in RBIs, and you kind of hit it right on the head on the nail there, saying that it's not really a sell-high candidate with Lowry, it's just somebody you ride the wave with, and hopefully you can get as much out of him as for as long as you can. Colin, do you believe in Jed Lowry here?
I don't believe in Jed Lowry. I mean, he's never done this before. He's been a platoon player. I did see him coming into the season as an underrated, you know, places which he hasn't shown yet, but I was taking him deep in draft and hold leagues just as, you know, a deeper option for myself. But I think he's the ultimate sell high, actually. If someone is willing to pay, you know, an Ian Kinsler or someone that's struggling out of the gate in middle infield, I would definitely jump on that, because instead of riding the wave, I'll try and balance out my team for the rest of the season instead of, you know, getting the stats and then him just falling off a cliff and having to drop him for the waiver wire out of the week.
I mean, we play in different leagues, but how many guys are actively going out and trying to get Jed Lowry, to be clear? I mean, yeah, in theory, if somebody offers you something for him, great, cool, take it. But I don't see that happening. I mean, just like, that's what I say, it's going to be impossible to sell high on a guy like that, because everybody knows it's Jed Lowry. Nobody's going to go out there and pay a mint for Jed Lowry, because they know they, A, don't have to, and B, it's not something fantasy owners are going to want to do. We're just not wired that way.
Well, I'll go after someone in my league. You know, I'll send some offers out there and see if they see if they accept him. Like I said, just someone that's struggling to begin the season, like an Ian Kinsler type. And you never know. They might believe it. They might think that, you know, in his 34 age season or whatever, however old he is, he's going to turn it around and become a top five second baseman. You just never know.
Well, coming into tonight, he had the same amount of RBIs as Stanton and Judge combined. So maybe you might get the last laugh here, Colin, if you go out and trade for Jed Lowrie. And we're talking about this a couple months from now saying, can you believe we weren't going to trade for Jed Lowrie? So we'll see how that plays out. Maybe you're right about that one, Colin.
So are you saying that I can trade Jed Lowrie for Judge or Stanton? Because I could do that. I can get on board with that.
Maybe. You should try it. Let me know how that works for you.
I'll let you know.
Another guy that is talked about on this podcast pretty much every week. There's a couple guys. You got your Brad Peacocks and stuff. But Malik Smith has been talked about on this podcast probably every single episode so far. And finally, he's getting the playing time. He's playing versus lefties. He's 5 for his last 11. Kiermaier's out. Colin, Malik Smith here. What's the ceiling for him?
With Malik's, you know, there's going to be ups and downs, but we wanted him for the steals. That's the one thing that we drafted him for. So getting those steals, getting the playing time, that's the only hiccup that we were encountering, you know, at the beginning of the season where he was batting ninth, where he was sitting against lefties, and now I don't think we have to worry about that moving forward.
Are you on the Malik Smith train like me and Colin are, Randy?
Not fully as on the train as you guys are, but yeah, I mean, while he's getting the playing time, there's no one else there that can take it from him as long as he's healthy. So again, you know, ride the wave. You know, the steals are obviously important. Malik Smith isn't the greatest baseball player in the world. I don't think anybody would mistake him for that. So once the Rays, if the Rays ever do get healthy, I mean, the playing time could go away, but they just might not. I could see a scenario where the way their season's starting off that Carlos Gomez gets, you know, DFA'd, or maybe they end up trading him to a contender that could use a short side platoon bat, so maybe the playing time stays there all year. Again, right while he's hot, there's going to be good enough batting average, and again, those steals will be important. So it's if you held on to your Malik Smith shares, you're rewarded.
Yeah, and it's definitely tough holding on to him because he struggled right out of the gate, but hopefully he can provide those steals that we always talk about with a mid to high average and make him a real valuable piece. One last guy I want to talk about before we get into injuries is Adam Ottavino, and he's pretty much polarizing at this point because you see articles every day coming out about him changing his delivery, him adding a pitch. He kind of reinvented himself, and he's definitely reaping the benefits of it. 10 2/3 innings, 22 strikeouts with a .84 ERA. Talk to me a little bit about Ottavino and what you know about it, Randy.
Yeah, I've seen some of those same articles that have been floating around there on the internet. You know, Eno Saris for The Athletic did a really good one talking about him redefining his delivery and then therefore altering a few pitches, and kind of, I don't, you know, really kind of did a deep dive on himself, you know, this offseason to try to make him see. He was already a good reliever, but now he's, you know, he might be one of the top, you know, 5, 6, 7 in baseball right now, the way things are going. And from, you know, from a fantasy perspective, if you're in anything 12 team or deeper, you know, he needs to be owned for the ratios. You're getting good strikeouts. He's picked up a couple of wins so far in relief. You know, relief wins are fluky enough as it is. He might not get any the rest of the year. He might end up with, you know, 8, 9, 10 wins out of the bullpen. But the ratios and the strikeouts are going to really help, you know, anything 12 team, especially 15 teams. He needs to be owned if he's not already.
Yeah, he definitely needs to be owned if he's not already. Just like you said, the guy's pretty much striking out 2 batters per inning, which is insane. Colin, do you have any shares of Ottavino? And if not, what do you think about what he's doing?
I don't have any shares of Ottavino. I've read the articles. I've seen the Frisbee slider that Pitching Ninja has shared throughout the year so far. But the problem with Ottavino is he's only going, you know, an inning at a time, sometimes, you know, less than that. And I know he's striking out 2 to 3 batters every time he goes out, but I just don't see, one, a line to get saves, 2, a line for multi-inning work. So he's not someone like a Brad Peacock that we were talking about in the beginning of the season, like a Josh Hader or Andrew Miller, where they could fall into some saves or fall into some starts like Peacock or fall into some long inning reliefs where it actually helps out your ratios. So for Ottavino, only doing one inning at a time, and, you know, he's striking out the guys, yeah, but it's only one inning towards your ratios for that year, so, or for that week. So I don't see myself picking him up in a 12-team league, maybe a 15-team league if I really need it. If it's a K-per-9 league, then yes, I'll go pick him up because he's super valuable right now. But, you know, I like to see the pitches that he's throwing. I like to see him reinvent himself and maybe some other guys will do it, but he's not someone that I'm running out to go try and add.
Yeah, and I think at this moment in time, he has a higher strikeout percentage than Josh Hader, Edwin Diaz, Chapman, Doolittle, a bunch of guys that are usually at the top of that list. So if Ottavino could keep it going, he might get some more high-leverage situations and be that eighth-inning guy and eventually maybe work his way into a closer role if anything does happen to Wade Davis. Now, injuries I want to talk about, and I want to start with Ken Giles. And Ken Giles had a weird week where everyone kind of wrote him off. Because Devinsky was getting the save, Peacock got a save. So now it comes out today that he's got this back injury and he hasn't been healthy. And he says he's ready to go. I think he said tomorrow or this weekend, I'm not sure. But he says he's ready to go. Now, him saying he's ready to go, does that mean they're going to stick him right back into that closer role? Because Devinsky's definitely flourished in that closer role. And I know you have a share of him, Randy. What are your thoughts on this whole situation?
Yeah, my stance hasn't changed since we talked about this last week, you know, where I do think at the end of the season, Giles is going to lead the team in saves. It's just not going to be as many as Giles owners, you know, were planning on when they drafted him this offseason. So from that perspective, it's frustrating. But my stance hasn't changed. I do think maybe I would tick Devinsky's saves up a little bit more than I would have a week ago, because it does seem like, you know, the other day they brought him in 3-run lead, ninth inning, and he was able to shut the door. But I do think eventually, just because of the flexibility they have with Devinsky throughout a game, that they should, you know, the Giles will still end up leading the team in saves.
Yeah, do you think so too, Colin, that Giles will end up leading the team in saves by the end of the year?
Well, I don't think Ken Giles is going to actually even keep this job much longer. I don't think that he has it right now. And I also think that I said a bold statement on the Coon and Friends podcast this week as well. I don't think that Houston is going to keep him in that role, let alone on their roster, if he keeps blowing up like he's been doing in the past and some portions of this year. They just have too many guys in that bullpen that can provide saves, that have shown it before with Hector Rondon, Will Harris, like you said, Chris Devinsky, Brad Peacock. Joe Smith, I mean, it just goes on and on. So I don't see them, you know, throwing him out there in the sixth or seventh inning, because if they do, he's going to blow up. And then, you know, if they throw him in a closing situation, he's going to blow up too. We've already seen that this year. He almost gave up a game-losing home run to Byron Buxton before he got the one-out save for his one save that he got. So I don't think that, you know, I can expect anything from him if I own him. And I'm probably looking to sell him for anything I can get for him, or else I'll just drop him.
So I'm with you, Colin. I really hope this isn't a case of this back injury has been lingering now, and that's why he hasn't been closing. And when he's healthy, they put him right back into the closer role. I hope that's not the case, but it definitely is a possibility that it could be. So Randy might be right in that aspect. But I do think Devinsky and Peacock are the better options at the back end of that bullpen. Another guy that got hurt this week, as multiple guys that got hurt in the past week, Tommy John surgery for Taijuan Walker and Danilson Lamet. Talk to me about these two guys and what it means for them going forward. And I think you were the one that broke the news to us, Randy, in the chat that Taijuan Walker was getting the Tommy John surgery.
Oh, it wasn't the surgery, but it was when the injury happened. I said to you guys that, you know, why is Walker so frustrating? He could be so good, but he's just so kind of just above average and just kind of blah. And then in the next inning, you know, they pull him out of the start, and we find out, you know, a few days later that he does need Tommy John. Lamet, it didn't surprise me that he ended up needing something, which is kind of the way things were coming out of San Diego since his injury. In a deep keeper league, keep him on your radar. Dynasty, obviously, but for redraft, you know, just cut him and move on.
And I know you drafted him in the main event, Colin, talking about Lamet here. What do you see from these guys, Walker and Lamet, as far as the future, what the future holds for them?
Yeah, just pile on, you know, my main event team. I do have Malik Smith, so there is that. But with Taijuan Walker, he's always been overrated to me, even whenever he was in Seattle. He was overrated, overdrafted, everything. It sucks that he's getting Tommy John, but I don't see myself picking him up in any format, even a 30-team dynasty league. I don't see myself picking him up. Lamet, I'll keep him on my radar. I'll keep him in the DL slot on a deep dynasty league this year, though.
So a couple other guys before we move into the Would You Rather segment. Carlos Gonzalez has a hamstring strain. Anthony Rendon hasn't played since Friday with a toe injury. So those are two things to keep your eye on here. So now we'll get into the Would You Rather. And we're going to kind of make this like a game format. I didn't even present this to you guys yet, Randy and Colin. what we're going to do here, if you guys disagree, I'm going to pick a winner. If you guys agree on something, I'm going to tell you if I think that's the right choice or the wrong choice. So I think that will give us some good dialogue as far as to see where we are in these guys. And we can look in the future to see who was actually right and who was wrong as far as this season goes. So we got one guy at each position here. And I came up with these guys to present to you guys. We're going to start with Jonathan Lucroy or Wilson Ramos. Randy, who do you got here?
I'm not in love with either one of them, but I'll take Lucroy just because he's in a better lineup. Skills-wise, so far, they've both been kind of not bad, but nothing spectacular. So I'll just, for something like that with a catcher, you know, Lucroy's also shown pretty decent durability throughout his career, whereas Ramos has had some injury questions before. So I'll take Lucroy over Ramos.
Colin, you agree or disagree, Randy?
Of course, disagree. So coming into the season, I was touting Wilson Ramos as my sleeper catcher for the year. He's batting, you know, either cleanup or fifth for them. He's probably one of their best hitters now that Kiermaier is on the disabled list. And with Lucroy, he hasn't batted higher than sixth in the lineup. And he's currently hitting, you know, 269, which is whatever. He has 4 RBIs and 8 runs and 0 home runs. So at least with Wilson Ramos, the second year coming off of the ACL injury that he had, which is usually, you know, I know in football, that's usually the year where everyone gets back to the same guy they were pre-injury. So I'm hoping that he gets back to what he was able to accomplish in Washington, his breakout year before going to Tampa Bay. And I think it's not even going to be close at the end of the year that Wilson Ramos will be ahead of Jonathan Lucroy.
So Ramos is off to a slow start. He's sitting every third game recovering from that ACL injury that we just spoke about, you just spoke about, Colin. But I do expect him to improve. And Lucroy has little competition there at Bruce Maxwell. So I'm going to give this one to Colin and put him up 1-0 here. I'll take Ramos over Lucroy at this point. It could change down the line if Ramos keeps struggling, but and Lucroy's playing time becomes a little bit more clear. But I do like Ramos for the time being. First base, Hanley Ramirez and Jose Martinez. We'll let you start off with this, Colin.
This is a tough one for me because I know coming into the draft season, I brought up the fact that maybe Hanley Ramirez might be someone to target late in drafts, and both of you poo-pooed the idea. Y'all said, it's Hanley Ramirez. There's no way I'm drafting him on my team. And now look at him. He's got 3 home runs, 15 RBIs, 3 steals, and he's hitting over 300 in the middle of that Boston lineup. So I think I'm going to lean towards Hanley. I'm surprised. I didn't think I would whenever I first saw the comparison, but there's been a couple reports coming out lately that Jose Martinez has had a lot of soft hits, basically calling him lucky to begin the season. They both have 3 home runs and 15 RBIs to start the season, but if Hanley, you know, if he puts his mind to it, I think that he could provide what he did with David Ortiz being there the last year. So with JD Martinez as the guy behind him, I'm going to go with Hanley, and I'll see how it plays out the rest of the season.
I don't like agreeing with you, but I'm going to go with Hanley. I like Jose Martinez. I have a couple of shares, but Hanley just his. You know, when he's healthy, he is one of the best offensive players, you know, in the American League. So you gotta, you know, again, hope he's healthy. You know, even if you only get 130, 140 games out of him, they should be really, really good games. You know, with kind of the way things are going with him right now, it's a better lineup, not by a lot, but it is a better lineup in Boston than it is in St. Louis. And Martinez has already been banged up a little bit so far this year. He had that Achilles scare. I believe he hurt his wrist or hand or something. At the end of last week, he said he's sore in a lot of different places, was a quote he had earlier this week. So I'll go with Ramirez.
And I'm going to say you both are wrong there. And Jose Martinez is the better option. Hanley's removed, just 1 year removed from a terrible 240, 2060 season. Terrible by fantasy standards. Even though he hit the 20 home runs, he still hit 240. Jose Martinez seems like a professional hitter here, and he's going to have that high average to go along with a decent amount of homers and RBIs. I think Jose Martinez is the play here.
I like Jose Martinez, but Jose Martinez is also 1 year removed from being a career minor leaguer. So I don't know if we can, you know, even though I like the adjustments that he's made and what he's, you know, the skills that he's showing, it's not like this is a super long track record guy, you know, that there's no reason to not doubt. So
what I do like about Jose Martinez is that his strikeout percentage is only 8.6 right now. Colin?
Yeah, but with Hanley, you know, last year he had all the pressure in the world on him. There was no one else to back him up in that lineup. It was basically they needed him to provide what David Ortiz provided the year before. And he just wasn't up to the task. It was too much pressure. He didn't see any pitches to hit. And now that they have JD Martinez behind him, I think that he might be able to do, like I said, what he did with David Ortiz in his last year. So like Randy was saying, I do like Jose Martinez. I have him on a few leagues. But I just – I want to believe in Hanley, and he said he wanted to steal 30 bases and probably hit 30 home runs, so I'm going to hope that he does that.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I do like Hanley. I just like the fact that Jose Martinez strikes out less and hits for a higher average that I think is more sustainable than Hanley's high average right now. But both guys are definitely good options. Second base, we got Jose Perella and Zach Cozart, and these are two guys that have gotten off to pretty hot starts here. Colin, who do you like?
I'm going to go with Zach Cozart. With Jose Perella, he's been leading off most of the time the past week or so. And he's actually just playing the outfield, which I think is a testament to the injuries that they've had to begin the season. But if he's playing the outfield, there's a lot more turnover, and he might find himself losing at bats just because of the better players that are on the DL right now. And he is a free swinger. He has no walks, basically. He's walking at a 3.3% clip. And coming into draft season, I was believing in Zach Cozart as the breakout like he did last year. I had him touted as a top 10 shortstop coming into the year, and now he's going to gain second base and third base eligibility. So I can play him all over the middle of the diamond and sometimes at the corner infield position. So he was leading off whenever Kinsler was on the DL. I think Kinsler has been frail in the past. So, you know, he can find himself at the leadoff position right in front of Mike Trout and eventually Shohei Ohtani whenever he starts batting third.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Cozart on this as well. I like Perella. I've got a couple of shares and I'm enjoying them, but I don't see it lasting. And if he starts to slow off a little bit, the Padres have a lot of other options in the outfield. They have Franchy Cordero. They have Hunter Renfro that they could play. Margot's coming off the DL. Will Myers is coming back. So if Perella starts to, you know, if he starts to slow down, his playing time could go away. Whereas Cozart, as long as he's healthy, he's going to be out there every day for the Angels. So I'm enjoying Perella where I have him right now. But for the season, I'll take Cozart.
Yeah, I agree with you guys there. And Randy, I think you hit it on the nail. I'm enjoying Perella right now as well. The thing with Cozart is everybody was so down on him, and he really got off to the first good couple of games. But since then, he hasn't done much. He's sitting here hitting 247 with two homers and seven RBIs. Nothing to write home about. But I do like him long term. He is in a better lineup. He is in a better situation as far as playing time goes. So I'll stay with Cozart on that one. Third base, I got two guys here, and one of them I really like, Matt Chapman and Mike Moustakas. What do you got there, Randy?
Matt Chapman. Yeah, I like Moustakas. It looks like the power's come back a little bit this week. He had a good series up in Toronto. But Chapman just has a much higher upside. You know, Chapman ran a little bit in the minors enough where I don't think he'll put up a zero in steals this year. And he's in a much better lineup, even though Oakland's lineup isn't the greatest. I think it's kind of sneaky good, but it's, you know, a million times better than what the Royals are throwing out there some nights. So I'm going to go with Chapman on this one.
Colin, you agree with Randy there?
Yeah, I do agree. So Matt Chapman came into the draft season, you know, expecting some power. Right now he's hitting 296, which is very surprising. I don't see that lasting, but these two guys are very similar to me. The reason I do lean towards Matt Chapman is because he's going to provide a couple steals, like Randy said, and he is in a better lineup. Mike Moustakas has surprised me a little bit. He's hitting 348 right now. I think most of that is from from the past couple days, but you know, he still has four home runs himself. He's barely walking though, so that's a little bit of a concern. I'm going to lean towards Matt Chapman just because of the potential. I know what I can get from Moustakas, and I see them maybe even ending up the year close to similar, but Chapman could provide me with a few steals and then more counting stats on a better team.
See, I do like Chapman, and a fun fact about Chapman, I'm sure everyone knows this by now, him and Nolan Arenado are on the same high school team, which is just absurd to me, but because they are the two best fielders in third base in the major leagues, but how many people really know Mike Moustakas in 348 right now? I mean, he's off to a nice start here. Somebody's going to have to hit in Kansas City. I think he's a little bit of a safer play than Matt Chapman is. Not necessarily a better player, but for fantasy purposes, this guy's he's going to give you 30 home runs, 25 to 30 home runs. I don't know if I could guarantee that with Chapman. And since Chapman's hot start, he's fallen off a little bit there. So I think Mike Moustakas might be the safer play here. Chapman obviously has the more upside, but I do like Moustakas in this would you rather. Shortstop, Didi Gregorius, Gene Segura, and these, talk about polarizing guys. Didi Gregorius is really like a trending topic on Twitter. People are going at Brian Kenny every day for putting him 10th in the shredder. So, Randy, who do you like here between Didi and Gene Segura?
Overall, I'm going to take Didi, but I think it also depends on what your team needs. If this is a, if, you know, if it's a trade scenario, if you need speed, you're obviously going to trade for Segura. But if you if you're looking for some more power, just maybe just the better the best player, I think right now it's Didi. I mean, the power that he's showing and the plate skills that he's showing are just they keep getting better every year. And in that lineup, it's just it's loaded. I mean, he's gonna have you know he could as long as he's healthy. I'm seeing an, easily 100 runs, and he could even push you know 100 RBIs there. So I would take Didi overall. But if like I said, if it's a trade scenario and I need steals, I would go for Segura. But Didi's the better player for me.
What about you, Colin? Who do you like better there, Didi or Segura?
It's Didi in a landslide, actually. So I think the concern coming into the season was his batting position in that stacked lineup, which we all didn't take into consideration that Greg Bird is never going to be healthy and he's never going to live up to his hype. So he's slotted right in between Stanton and Judge right now. And I'm loving that if I'm the owner of Didi Gregorius. Now, his percentages are a little bit wonky, to say the least. He's walking at 20% clip and only striking out at 5%. So that'll even out throughout the year. I do think, you know, the five home runs that he's hit so far in April, this might be his best home runs for or this might be his best month for home runs. But I think overall in production, he's going to keep it up for the rest of the year. And with Segura, he's always had that injury. So the lineup around Gene Segura this year is a lot better. However, I do think that Didi is going to keep it up for the rest of the year. I think that maybe April might be his best home run month, but he's going to keep producing in the RBIs. Greg Bird's not going to stay healthy, so I'm all in on Didi Gregorius this year.
Tommy Pham, George Springer, Colin, I know you might be in the minority in this one. Who do you got here?
It's Tommy Pham, and it's not close. I think he's performing at a first-round caliber hitter right now. He's got the power. He's got the speed. He's got the average. He's everything that he was last year and more. I think we're going to get more games of it. I think we're going to get more counting stats because of it.
Randy, do you agree with that bold statement from Colin?
I do not. Springer's the guy for me. You know, Pham has had injury issues with the in the past. He has the thing with his eyes. He's got a hamstring tweak that's kind of going on right now. And Springer's just a much more talented player. Pham is a great story. He's a really good fantasy player, but it's Springer for me, and it's probably not even all that close.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with Randy there. Pham's good. Don't get me wrong. I do like Pham, but he's got to prove more to me to go ahead of George Springer. I mean, George Springer is one of the elite players in baseball right now. And Colin, you're telling me if you had a redraft right now, you're taking Pham over Springer?
I'm taking Pham over Springer, yeah.
Without even a thought?
Without a doubt.
All right, well, that's definitely something to keep an eye on going forward. Verlander, Severino as our starting pitchers. Randy, between the two, both of them are awesome. Who do you take if you had to choose?
I had Severino slightly ahead of Verlander preseason. Nothing's really happened so far to change my opinion on that. So I'll stick with it, but both are great options. Can't go wrong with either one. So I'll just say Severino.
Do you agree with him, Colin? Because I like Severino over Verlander. I know most people probably wouldn't, but if I was choosing today in a draft, I'll take Severino. I guess for upside purposes, because Verlander's done it a handful of years now. Who do you like there?
I understand the upside purposes, but Verlander's the guy for me. I mean, he's shown it. He's been consistent regardless of 1 year, I believe 2016. But, you know, with Houston, he's going to get the wins that he wasn't getting with Detroit. And he's just been so consistent. I'm going to take Verlander. I know it's close, but I have a liability for Verlander.
All right. I could see the argument there, and I'm fine with being in the minority by taking Severino, but one more. relief pitchers. Before we wrap it up, Brad Hay and Jairus Familia. Just give me a name here, Colin. Who do you got?
It's Familia, and it's actually surprising to me. You know, he's shown that he's back to where he was pre-injury and pre-suspension. And I know he's got the most saves in the league right now. He might not be able to keep that up. But, you know, Hand started off rocky. He was always a risk for save chances in San Diego. But, you know, Familia has shown it so far, and I'm buying into the hype. So I'm going to take Familia in this one.
Yeah, and he's actually one of the crazier stories as far as guys really regaining their value here so far early in the season. Randy, you like Familia or Hand?
Yeah, it's definitely Familia for me, the way things are going. And if the Mets are going to be good, that's just another added bonus. But Familia looks like the guy that he did pre-injury.
Yeah, if this first month's been a preview of things to come, I think Familia is the obvious choice there. So we'll wrap it up. Until next week, which I might not be able to make the show next week. We'll have a fill-in, whether it's Justin Mason or Ben Brennis or whoever it is. Somebody will fill in if I'm not able to make it. Colin, just real quick, shout out your Twitter here so everyone can go follow you.
You can find me at CWeatherWax13. I would follow Mike the Rotocop next week. He's going to be in Costa Rica, so I'm sure we'll be seeing some awesome pictures from his Twitter feed.
I try to keep it to just baseball, but we'll see. If there, I just got a new GoPro, so maybe I'll send something. Randy, what do you think?
Yeah, I am on Twitter at RTH222, and enjoy your trip, Mike. Have fun. Yeah,
appreciate it. I'll be counting on you guys to keep me updated in the group chat about what's going on in baseball over here in the States. Listen, Friends of Fantasy Benefits, hope you guys enjoyed. See you next week.